on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP Financial Executive Vice President, Portfolio Manager, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to InvestTalk. This is our Monday, February 23rd, 2015 edition of InvestTalk. And I'd like to welcome all of our listeners listening up and down California, those listening online via InvestTalk.com, and also our many, many thousands of podcast listeners that listen each and every day around the world. And we welcome you to this February 23rd edition of InvestTalk. And the big question on today's show is, what kind of investor are you? Now, of course, since you're listening to InvestTalk, we can assume you have a little more than a passing interest in managing your own money. But the question is, do you have a clear idea of your strategy? Now, you've heard Steve and myself talking many times about our risk analysis tool, and it really can be the first step in building a foundation for your strategy. Knowing your capacity for risk is extremely important. And, you know, maybe it's not our risk analysis tool. Maybe it's another risk analysis tool. But I think that's always where the first place you need to go to. First thing you need to figure out. Because if you don't know your capacity for risk, then you don't know what investments are appropriate for you. Now, it's one of the tools we use with our clients to be sure their holdings are going to match up with their attitude about risk, as well as their life situation. So we're prepared to help all of our clients and all of our listeners navigate every market environment. That's really what's required of all seasoned investors. You know, any monkey can make money during a bull market. It's really not that hard. Right? You buy most things and they go up. But that's not the nature of markets. Markets go up and go down. And most people panic in, they panic out. But to have a longer term view, to have the correct path, you need to be taking the appropriate risk. Now, to give you an example, in our dynamic growth portfolio, we utilize stocks, ETFs, closed-end funds, ADRs to gain exposure to companies and asset classes that demonstrate good value, strength, growth, in order to produce, you know, above-average returns. And really, the lion's share of investors would find this approach the most appropriate and productive. This approach allows us to be aggressive in bull market phases and transition defensive stance when we think bear market periods are around the corner. Now, the well-rounded investor must consider shorting the market at times, shifting to higher levels of cash when market conditions call for it. And I think this is an overlooked strategy for a lot of people. You know, most people think of opportunity. I say this a lot, but many people I don't think have heard it. Is there's opportunity in the market at all times. There is. There's always opportunity. But when most people hear opportunity, they think opportunity to go out and buy something, right? Go buy a company. That's the opportunity. And in many times, that's true. There are opportunities to buy companies. But there are also many opportunities to sell companies. That's also an opportunity. And why is an opportunity? Well, because other investors are willing to pay too much for that particular company. And maybe you own that particular company, you own that stock, and you should probably cut back. That's the opportunity. Cut back. Maybe sell the whole position. That can be an opportunity. Maybe it's to short a particular stock. Think of the NASDAQ and all the NASDAQ stocks in 2000. The opportunity was to short the vast majority of them. And you could have made a lot of money. Think of housing, home builders in 2005, 2006. The opportunity then was to short, not to buy, if you understood the fundamentals. So being able to identify that is just as equally as important as being able to identify the opportunities that come along when you want to buy something. Okay, so it cuts both ways. Now, as you look at the characteristics of a successful and responsible investor, you have to look at diversification as well to avoid being overexposed to any one investment. Now, maybe we can help you find the appropriate strategy for yourself, and we're here to steer you along, get you going in the right direction during this hour. I hope to talk with you and hopefully talk to you directly. We're live, 4 to 5 Pacific time. Our number is 888-99-CHART. That's 888-992-4278. That's the number to get through and ask your question right now on Invest Talk. And we have about 45 minutes left in the show. And we always encourage people to call sooner rather than later. Don't wait till the last, you know, segment, which is about 5 minutes long, because it's hard to get everyone in. So give us a call sooner rather than later. Now it's time for our Q&A section right now. Let's go to our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is Aram from Boston. I listen to you on podcast. Great show. I had a quick question. I was wondering whether you could recommend some good sector ETFs that's poised for growth in 2010, like probably in energy or technology sectors, or any other sector that you think would be great. Thanks a lot, and I'll listen to you on podcast. Bye.
All right, what sectors might be good? Well, that's, you know, that's difficult. Poised for growth this year. Well, you know, I think this is a year, so far the year has been about growth stocks. But when you talk about good values in the marketplace, I mean, I think energy is really the place that you want to start. That's where a lot of the value is. And I also think chemicals, chemical sector. For energy, XLE is probably the biggest energy ETF out there. There's not really a good chemical, I think, ETF that I would narrow in on, but I do like that sector. I really do still like that sector. So those are kind of the two places I would be looking. Right? So let's go to our talking points today and touch on quickly what we're going to discuss. First off, we're going to discuss risky investments. What are the risky investments you should probably avoid? What are the things that people get excited about, but usually they get excited for the wrong reasons and usually at the wrong time as well? So we're going to touch on that and whether or not you see if you're thinking about those type of investments and what you should watch out for, the mindset you should have when going into those endeavors, right? Going into investing in those type of investments. So we're going to touch on that. I also want to talk about the home sales reports, the existing home sales report for January, and I think that is going to be very, very interesting to touch on. What were the specifics, and what does that mean for our housing market going forward? And then Greece. Greece, I think, is going to be very, very important not just this week, but for the next few months. They were supposed to hand in a report on what their plans are for their programs and austerity and et cetera to the Troika for approval to the IMF and ECB and all the entities that make up the Troika and for approval. And they still haven't done it, so they've moved it back till tomorrow. But there's a lot of obstacles that still lie ahead for this deal. And we're going to touch on that and whether or not that's going to, I think, pass. And then Obama and the Obama administration has proposed some new rules for the 401k industry, fiduciary rules. And we knew this was coming down the pipeline. It's coming a little slower than expected. But I still think it's inevitable, and that's one of the reasons why we launched our 401k solution, to help companies and individuals in their 401k investments, because most people don't have the time, expertise, knowledge, data to really make good investment decisions. Most 401k plans are sold by advisors that make huge commissions. And there's huge conflicts of interest. Something that us as registered investment advisors, fee-based advisors, we don't have those type of conflicts of interest because we don't collect commissions. So this is something that the Obama administration has been focusing on, and I think will come into effect in the next year or so. And I want to touch on that, and I think it's going to affect a lot of people who have 401ks out there. Now let's quickly get to the market for today. It was really a know-nothing day, or do-nothing day. The market was down pretty decently in the morning and staged a little bit of a comeback most of the day, and a big rally, I won't say big rally, a decent rally the last half hour or so. But the Dow still closed down 26 points, the NASDAQ closed up 5 points, and the S&P was essentially flat. Gold was up a little bit, oil was up a little bit, you know, nothing really doing there either. I mean, nothing really moved more than 20 basis points. Gold had the best day, 18 basis points. For anybody out there, 18 basis points means 0.18%. That's what that means. So really no big move on the markets today. Still a lot of wait and seeing on Europe. There's on Greece, there was a lot of big hullabaloo on Friday that this deal was reached. And I think in a lot of ways, it's still very tentative and hangs on a lot of different things. So I think the market's waiting on that. Now, we have a webinar scheduled for March 19th that you can sign up for very, very soon. But we also have a library of webinars, including The New America, a presentation of the growing strength in U.S. manufacturing. You can play it back anytime. All you have to do is sign up for the free InvestTalk Insider program. It's right there for you on InvestTalk.com. 888-99 chart, 888-992-4278. That's how you get through to ask your question on today's show. And our main talking point today is about risk and risky investments that most people should probably avoid. Now, a lot of people get excited about investments that are in the media, right? That the media talks about a lot. And it's usually about IPOs. Media gets always hyped up about IPOs. And most people don't realize how IPOs really work. And how they're usually pre-sold to institutional investors. And they don't understand how volatile stocks can be immediately after IPOs. Now, a lot of times they're volatile to the upside, but many times they're volatile to the downside. So it's easy to get enthralled by the latest, you know, shiny investment that's out there. And financial advisors across the board say clients often contact them about a hot sector or investment that they've been hearing about in the media. Because they're worried about missing a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. The problem with that is, usually by the time it hits the media, that once-in-a-lifetime, quote-unquote, lifetime opportunity has come and gone. And you're usually closer to the last one to the game than the first one. So we're going to talk about these more coming up on today's show. I'm Portfolio Manager Justin Klein. 888-99-CHART is how to reach me right now with your money topics on InvestTalk. I'm ready for your call right now. Let's talk. Now, InvestTalk is a two-way conversation, but if you have a question between programs, you can still ask us on the next InvestTalk. We're here for you at 888-99-CHART.
This is Oscar from San Francisco. Thank you for your show. Wondering what you think on Occidental Petroleum, ticker symbol OXY. Thank you very much.
All right, he's looking at Occidental Petroleum. This is big oil company. It's a shale company, and they've fallen on hard times. Obviously, like most oil companies, they've gone from about $65 a share at the high middle of last year. It's called $64 a share. Now we're hit a low of 28 and change. Now we're at the 36 and change at the close today. Yields about 3.6%. Nice dividend. Debt, 16% debt to equity ratio. That's what I like, especially for anything in the oil industry right now. Low debt is important. Because low debt means you can borrow easier, means you can sustain low oil prices, low profitability for an extended period of time, and not go bankrupt, not make bad capital allocation decisions. And I think Occidental Petroleum is in that camp. They're obviously going to struggle if oil prices stay low. But, you know, with that nice dividend, which is pretty safe, you know, payout ratio when they were making $7.19 a share was about 40%. Now they're supposed to go down to $1.37 this year in earnings. When their dividend is $2.80. So they're all of a sudden that dividend payout ratio is going to go over 100%. Now, I think a lot of that's being writing down certain assets, taking losses, things like that. So I don't think that'll be a cash flow issue. So I think they can handle that dividend short term. But if oil stays down here for an extended period of time, I think a dividend probably will be cut to some degree, maybe not dramatically, but will be cut. But that's going to means oil has to stay down here for 3-5 years in the $40 to $50 range. I don't see that happening. So I think this is a relatively low-risk name in the oil industry, and I kind of like it. I'm a fan of Oxy. It's maybe not my favorite name in the oil industry, but it would probably be in the top 10 of the oil companies that I would buy during this downturn. All right? That was Occidental Petroleum. OXY is the symbol. Now, our talking point today is about risky investments and the fact that many common investors get delusional about the latest, greatest thing out there that's being talked about. Now, IPOs are notorious for people getting too overhyped about them. You know, the media talks about them. People think that they're missing out. But if you understand the structure of an IPO, usually over the longer term, now in the short term, IPOs can, the momentum behind an IPO and the excitement behind an IPO can stay. So it can be a great trade over a short period of time. But over the long term, most IPOs aren't great investments. They aren't. Now you can talk about certain ones like Google, which was a great IPO. Their IPO was a little bit different than most IPOs. So I think if it was priced like most IPOs, it probably wouldn't have been as great an investment. You know, there's Facebook, which initially wasn't a great investment, has turned out to be a pretty good. But those are more of the exception than the rule, even though most people talk about them. And the reason you talk about it, because they're still around, they're still big, they're still going up. Most people don't talk about the ones that go down and go bankrupt or go to pennies, right? Because those aren't exciting anymore. They're crappy investments. So realize that most IPOs, especially if you're a small investor, you don't have a great relationship with the institutions that are taking the company IPO, you're probably getting a subpar IPO, right? The ones that are really good IPOs, the big mutual funds, hedge funds, private equity firms, they're the ones that are picking those up. Because it's a lot easier to go to them and get allocations of tens of millions of dollars and then hundreds of millions of dollars to fill an IPO. And what you also have to remember is who's selling in an IPO? The owners of the company. Are they going to sell when terms for them are poor? No, they're probably going to sell when terms of them are pretty good, for them are pretty good, meaning the stock's pretty expensive. So that's IPOs. There's other ones as well. Think of leverage closed-end bond funds. Things that pay these a lot of these bond funds that are paying high dividends, well, they're highly leveraged. And the volatility can really ramp up when all of a sudden things go a little south. Just look at HYLD. It's a high-yield bond fund, very leveraged to the energy space, went down about 30% or so because of the oil wrap in something that, you know, bond fund is supposed to be pretty safe. What else? Exotic ETFs. Those get popular. Single country, single sector ETFs that people are chasing performance, like the biotech sector right now. So try to control your emotions. To, you know, if it's been being talked about in the media, everyone's falling in love with it, the odds are you're probably one of the last of the game. Now, coming up in the next half hour, what is an irrevocable trust? We want to hear from you. 888-99-CHARGE is how to reach us on InvestTalk.
We thank you for subscribing to our podcast. And if you have an idea for a talking point you'd like to know more about, get in touch. Write us a note. Just go to investtalk.com, click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin. If you want to venture outside the index fund box, there are risks to add to the excitement. Sector investing mutual funds, the road less traveled. That's our talking point next time on InvestTalk. We hope you'll join us then.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Now, we talk about the complexities of investing environments each and every day. And I'm sure you have a question. We're ready to hear it now at 888-99-CHART. And if you're listening to our podcast, when we're not live, you can still get your question to us. Same number, 888-992-4278.
This is Kevin. I'm calling in from Kansas City. Listen to your show and picked up a wealth of information from you. I appreciate it. I listen to you on a podcast via my SanDisk music player while I drive around and pick stuff all night at work. Anyway, I got a 401k, and a friend of mine at work showed me how to set it up. I put in the maximum 6% that they match. Well, anyway, sitting there watching it go down in the first year, I got upset and decided I'd open a Roth. So I opened a Roth and put a bunch of stocks in there, and now I'm getting all these K-1 forms. I guess I don't really quite understand Master Limited Partnerships and K-1 stocks and what exactly I can put in a Roth and can't put in a Roth. So maybe if you can just answer the question, I'll be listening to you online. Okay, thank you. Bye.
Well, first off, I want to congratulate him on contributing his full employer match, something everybody needs to do. If you're not doing it, you're giving away money. Usually they match 50%. Or 100% of X percent of your paycheck. And if you're not contributing as much as they're matching, then you're making a bad decision, money decision, period. Because there's no investment you can make that can guarantee you a 50% or 100% return on your money. So first, I want to congratulate him on that. Second, Master Limited Partnerships is something that everybody needs to understand, especially in this environment where there's low interest rates and everyone is chasing yields. Master Limited Partnerships are taxed differently. They're taxed your ordinary income tax rate. And in a retirement account, anything tax deferred, an IRA, a Roth IRA, a 401k, a Roth 401k, anything that's tax deferred, a 403b, anything that's tax deferred, if you get income over $1,000, you are going to have to pay taxes on that income. So be aware of that. You're going to get K-1s. You're going to have to pay taxes on it. And now you can put it in your traditional account as well. You're still going to have to pay taxes on it. But in a 401k and an IRA, the point of having those retirement vehicles is that your investments are not taxed. Your growth of those investments, your income from those investments are not taxed. That's one of the main benefits. It's the main benefit of those type of accounts, okay? So don't put those in there. So that's why you're getting K-1s. And for those that are investing in them in just a regular brokerage account, realize that a 6% yield or 4% yield, whatever yield a Master Limited Partnership is paying, is not created equal compared to a yield you're getting from a Procter & Gamble or a Johnson & Johnson or whatever traditional big blue chip company you're thinking about. Same with REITs. REITs are also taxed differently. Not the same as Master Limited Partnerships. Not the same as traditional blue chip stocks. So you have to understand those tax consequences. So this is what I talk about. It's what we talk about when we say, when you're making investments, you need to understand the big picture, the pros and the cons. You know, a dividend is a pro for a particular investment. That's great. It's cash returned to shareholders. Now, that's the majority of the time it's a pro. Sometimes it can be a con if that dividend is unsustainable. Then they're just wasting your money. They're borrowing money to pay a dividend, for example, which happens a lot as well. So don't think that every data point is created equal. Don't just focus on the positives. Focus on the negatives as well. You have to look at both sides of the coin when making investments. And if you're not, you don't understand those pros and cons, you need to have a professional do it for you. Or just put it in money market, keep saving away. You're not going to get a good return on your investment thanks to the Fed lowering interest rates. And you don't have any risk, and you know, you just keep growing your nest egg at a very slow pace. So it depends on what you want to do, but if you want to make money, you're going to have to take some risks, and you have to know what those risks are. And how does that risk fit into your whole portfolio? So great call. I think it's a great point that I think a lot of people overlook is tax consequences, what type of investments you're investing in, whether it fits for you, whether it fits for the type of accounts that you have. So, you know, some people have a 401k, an IRA, a Roth IRA, a Roth 401k, a traditional brokerage accounts. You know, maybe they have other types of accounts out there as well. You need to have a plan for all that. Okay? Now let's talk quickly about Greece. Greece, was in the news all last week. And it continues to be in the news so far this week because supposed to tonight, some point, you know, Greece is a few many hours ahead of us, but, you know, it's almost Tuesday there. And today, Monday, they were supposed to submit plans, right? So Greece won a four-month extension to design a long-term solution for its problems. They got permission to propose reforms to its creditors, placing a one-sided conversation with actual dialogue. You know, before it was about what was the Troika going to make them do. Now they basically negotiated, let's have a dialogue. Well, in order to do that, the Euro area, all the creditors, they want to see basics of what their plan is before they say, okay, we're willing to talk to you about that plan. So Greece won that, but the Euro area creditors succeeded in maintaining their demands for Greece to post very large primary balance surpluses in the long run. Meaning, a primary surplus is basically when before you pay interest on your debt, how much budget surplus are you running, okay? And to do that, you need to, in Greece's case, have a lot of austerity because they were spending way too much money. That's how I got into this situation. So there's a lot of hurdles, though, that need to get over for this plan to take effect. So the ECB, European Central Bank, needs to sign off it, the IMF, the European Commission, and all the national parliaments also have to approve it by the 28th, meaning basically by the weekend. Now, in the past, the Troika, the ECB, the IMF, and the European Commission, they drew up the conditions attached to the loans with very little input from Greek leaders. Now, Greece has negotiated that they can play a significant role in shaping those conditions. Now, Greece did negotiate the fact that their primary surplus this year was going to be 3%, and they basically said, okay, it doesn't necessarily have to be 3% this year. But creditors still are keeping in place what they expect it to be in the long run, which is 4.5%, which is still very hard to get to. And if they want to get in line with the goals to get to a debt-to-GDP ratio of 110% in 2022, they're going to have primary surpluses even larger than that, meaning even more austerity. So while Greece negotiated better terms for this year, they didn't really negotiate better terms in the long run. And so they need to propose basic reforms that get approved by the weekend. And all that does is start a dialogue with the ECB, the IMF, and the European Commission to hammer out a new proposal, complete proposal, for the next 10 years, basically, that is amendable by, for each side. And this list of reforms will define the bridge to something that might be slightly different going forward. So it might be slightly different, but it's going to be largely what it was before. So there are still a lot of hurdles that need to be overcome in a very short period of time. If one of those parliaments don't approve it, well, Greece's extension of this bailout, the final 3.5 billion euros of a 7.2 billion euro loan tranche that was scheduled to be delivered at the end of this month to keep their fiscal house in order, keep them solvent, will not be given. So, all in all, the agreement reached on Friday provides a very clear roadmap for the next 4 months, but many, many obstacles remain in the way. So don't think that Greece is out of the woods. I know every Friday everyone's saying, they made a deal. Well, they made a tentative deal that has a lot of caveats to it that need to be overcome in a very short period of time. So don't think that this saga is over. Now be sure to take advantage of our free risk analysis tool. It takes less than 5 minutes, and it will help you determine your level of risk tolerance. When you know that number, you can then determine whether your retirement portfolio is a good match. Just go to investtalk.com and look for the blue box that says free risk analysis tool.
Why not visit investtalk.com today and see Steve's latest market commentary, Why Gold? See Steve's latest take on the market and the economy, a regular feature on investtalk.com.
Hi, this is Mike in Tampa, Florida. I listen to your show quite often. I think it's a great show. I just kind of came across a small cap company. It's called Arena Pharmaceuticals, Inc., and I just wondered if you thought it was what your thoughts on the company were, whether it would be a buy, sell, or hold. I don't own a position in the company, but I just wondered what you thought. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
All right, he's looking at Arena Pharmaceuticals. They develop G-protein-coupled receptor-based drugs for metabolic, cardiovascular, and central nervous system indications. I'm not sure what a G-protein-coupled receptor-based drug is, but that's what they produce. It's obviously a biotech company. This has been, it had a big spike recently. Went from about $3.50 a share, reached about $6.50 or $6 a share, and now it came back all the way down into the mid four range, and it's still in the mid four range. They don't make money. They've never made money. This is a casino stock. I mean, a lot of these biotech companies are casino stocks. Most of them don't make money. They burn cash. This has 77% debt-to-equity ratio and rising, high risk. I'm not sure what the news was exactly, but, you know, it's a high-risk name. Now, the chart looks pretty good. You know, it had a big move. It's kind of consolidating that move. Their revenues are growing dramatically, but they're still in the, $30 million in sales range, right? $30 million in sales on a market cap of over $1 billion. So huge price-to-sales ratio. They were profitable the second quarter of 2013, and they were also profitable in the second quarter of 2014. So, you know, they're starting to get some profitability, but they're not profitable for a full year yet. I would say this is, on a technical basis, it's good. On a fundamental basis, it's terrible. It's a high-risk name, and I would need to know a lot more about it. I probably would give it a pass unless you're looking using gambling money, shall I say. Now it's time for Invest Talk Personal about the day-to-day money decisions that can have a lasting impact on our lives. Now you've heard of them, and they sound very important somehow, but what are they really? An irrevocable trust. Well, we can say that they're the opposite of a revocable trust, and that probably doesn't help much. But, well, the definition provided by Investopedia puts it this way. It's a trust that can't be modified or terminated without the permission of the beneficiary. The grantor, having transferred assets into the trust, effectively removes all of his or her rights of ownership to the assets and the trust. So why would someone need an irrevocable trust? The only reason you'd really bother is for estate and tax consideration. Here's what it does. Helps remove all incidents of ownership. And that removes the trust assets from the grantor's taxable estate. So from that point, the grantor is relieved of the tax liability on the income generated by the assets. Now, when we get into the tax regulations, the details will vary from one jurisdiction to another. So what assets can be held in an irrevocable trust? They can include a business, investment assets, cash, and life insurance policies. Of course, this is not likely something you're going to set up without the services of a professional. But these are the basics. So if you need help with that, we have trust attorneys that we can turn you to. We have a solution that's very cheap, much cheaper than most trust attorneys, and we can help you with that, and we help our clients with that as well. So if you need help with a trust, feel free to give us a call. Now that's Invest Talk Personal. If there's any money topics you like to know about, get in touch with us, 888-99-CHART, by phone, or click on the Contact Justin on investtalk.com. Now you're listening to Invest Talk. I'm Portfolio Manager Justin Klein, and our money management firm, KPP Financial, offers four different programs suited to different needs and life situations, like our Dynamic Growth Program. You can find out more about it on our website at investtalk.com. Look for the Investing tab at the top of the page. Chart 888-992-4278. We still have 5 minutes left in the show to get your call in, so you better do it fast if you're going to make it. Now, a report came out today on the housing front on existing home sales, which is about 90% of the home market. So, really a good indication of the home market. And this is from the National Association of Realtors, and the housing market kicked off 2012 with a very chilly start, led by sharp sales declines in the Northeast and West. Sales in the West fell 7.1%, in the Northeast falling 6%, down 4.6% in the South, and 2.7% in the Midwest. Now, this report came out today and says that sales of previously owned homes fell more than analysts expected, reaching their lowest level in 9 months. Fell 4.9% seasonally adjusted to a 4.82 million rate, 4.82 million homes if that number continued for 12 months is basically what that means. And this marked the lowest rate since the 4.75 million reported in April of last year. And the 4.9% decline in sales is much sharper than analysts expected. They expected a 1.8% drop. Okay, so analysts got it much wrong once again. Now, inventories are still tight, but they did improve slightly in December. They were up about 0.5% to 1.87 million homes. That was a figure that is 0.5% lower than the 1.88 million that were available in January of last year. So it got a little bit better month over month, but still less inventory than we had last year. We had about a 4.7 month supply. So basically, when they talk about supply, it's basically saying, okay, we have this many homes for sale, and if we continue to sell the amount of homes that we did last month, how many months would it take to eat up that supply of homes, right? Well, right now it would take 4.7 months. Last month it was 4.4 months. Anything below 6 months means it's generally a pretty healthy housing market. I mean, there's not really an oversupply that could really push prices down dramatically. But it did increase a little bit. All right. What else? The average price of the home did increase 6.2% year over year. The number of days on the market increased slightly. The biggest worry for me on this is mortgage rates fell. They went from 3.86 in December to 3.67 in January, and usually that should boost home sales. So what happens when interest rates go up in a month? How is that? How is the housing market going to handle that? And that's probably the biggest worry when it comes to the housing market overall. Let's quickly get to John in Redwood City. How you doing, John?
Good. How's it going?
Good. What can I do for you?
So I have a 403B account from a former employee mm-hmm. or employer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking or thinking about rolling it over to a Roth IRA.
Yes.
I just want to know what the fees are or if there's any a better option of, like, less fees, if it's even ideal to do that for the long run.
How old are you?
I'm 36.
Okay. Are you in a high tax bracket, low tax bracket, medium tax bracket?
28%, sorry.
Okay. Well, what's going to happen if you roll that from a 403B into a Roth IRA, you're going to be charged taxes. That's going to be taxed as income to you. Okay?
I see.
So that could affect – you're going to talk to your accountant and figure out whether – how if that's going to push you into a higher tax bracket, how much more in taxes you're going to have to pay, et cetera. Okay, now you might want to do that at piecemeal, so maybe you do $2,000 a year or $1,000 a year or whatever, so it doesn't affect your taxes too much. So you could do that, and I think that would be a good idea to do that. I don't know how much you have in that 403B, but I think that's a good idea. The fees are going to depend on what broker you send it to. Some brokers usually charge some sort of IRA fee, so it depends on what their annual IRA fee is. So that's really where the fees come in. All right, John?
Thanks for calling.
No problem. Now, before we close the hour, if you're an employer who'd like to reduce the administrative overhead associated with your 401k program, please ask us about our 401k solution. And KP Financial, as a registered investment advisor, enables employers to offer custom professional asset management to their employees for their 401k accounts. Just go to investtalk.com, click on the Investments tab to learn more. I'm Portfolio Manager Justin Klein, and for Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP Financial, I thank you for listening today, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.